Welcome back to this week's edition of the Midweek Reality Check with Michael Pinto, where I try to keep Wall Street and your money real.
A key date for the economy and markets is December 11th. That's the date the government shuts down if there's no agreement in D.C. on a budget. December 11th is when the continuing resolutions run out, and the House and Senate and President must agree on 12 appropriation bills. In addition to the closing of government during a pandemic, failure to reach an agreement to keep it open would also slam the door shut on additional stimulus to offset the massive fiscal cliff the economy is going over right now. On an optimistic note, the government may agree on funding and fiscal stimulus packages, totaling around $1.5 trillion. That's the number that I'm hearing being bandied around. But this makes that date, December 11th, crucially important. There's just a big difference between a government that is open and functioning, as well as DC is functioning ever, if you want to call that functioning, one that's open and one that passes another $1.5 trillion in fiscal support that's going to be printed very, very happily with alacrity by Mr. Powell, and alternatively, a macroeconomic environment where the pandemic is raging while the government is closed, and there is no mat underneath the fiscal cliff. Big difference. That might be short-term thinking for some people, but listen, I don't say I can make money every day. I don't even really, you know, that's not even something you should ever really hope for because it's impossible. Only Bernie Madoff ever did that. But if I see a month or two of an environment where the economy would be contracting, definitely slowing on a second derivative basis for sure, in a disinflationary environment, I'd like to capture that if I can. Conversely, if that doesn't happen, we continue on the march towards vaccine optimism and growth in the second derivative construct, then I'll try to capture that. Now let's just talk about how big the fiscal cliff really is. I went over this last week, but it bears repeating because, you know, last week was a holiday week and, you know, not everybody listened to the podcast, I'm sure. But even if you did, let's just go over just how tremendously, in the words of your president, huge the fiscal cliff is going to be. At the end of December, 29 million people will either lose their unemployment insurance and or have to begin making 9 months worth of mortgage, rent, and student loan payments that are in arrears. Don't forget, you pay these people more under enhanced unemployment than they would work if they were working. The enhanced unemployment is gone. The stimulus checks are gone. And now almost 30 million people are going to have to be making student loan payments, mortgage payments, rent payments, and lose their insurance, some combination of that. That's a lot. And it will also mark the end of the Fed's Wuhan virus lending programs. Also, the end of December. That's important. That's an important change in fiscal policy that you shouldn't ignore. But let's talk a little bit about the COVID scars. The scars that are going to be left behind once the virus leaves, if you believe that's going to be the case when these miracle vaccines kick in. I'm saying that a little tongue-in-cheek if you can't tell. 40% of all listed companies, these are not companies where mom and pop open up a pizzeria. 40% of listed companies mean companies that have qualified for trading on a major exchange. 40%, 4 out of 10, are money-losing ventures. They don't make any money. And 20% of all listed companies are now zombies, meaning that they have to borrow money to pay interest on existing debt. Borrowing new money, going further into debt just to pay the interest on the debt that's already outstanding. Zombie debt, the debt of these zombies, has increased by $1 trillion in the past year, or 270% year over year. Hello? $1 trillion. Talk about subprime mortgage debt. Oh, that was $1.5 trillion. There's $1 trillion just in zombie debt. What was new? An additional $1 trillion of zombie debt. It's 1.4 in total, I believe, at this moment. Total non-financial business debt, $17.5 trillion, up 75% in the last dozen years. Record amount of debt in the U.S. economy, and as a percentage of GDP, an absolute record, 370% of GDP. That's the total amount of debt in this country, in the United States. Scars left over. I'm not ignoring that. Now, the model still is bullish at this moment. But what do you want me to do? Would you like that I just hide in a bunker? We can't do that with our funds. We have to model the economy correctly and make money while you can. I mean, you could convince yourself to be extremely bearish all the time, and you'll probably be right eventually, and you will be right eventually, but we don't do that here. Now, the model shows, here's just a couple of things I'm looking at: break-even spreads, 210 treasury curve, construct, high yield and LIBOR spreads, etc. There's just a few things that the high frequency components of the model say there's nothing really to worry about today. It could change tomorrow. But what do you do today with your money? That's what we have to ask ourselves. What can we do with our money today? Where is it best going to be treated? So right now we're waiting on December 11th as a possible date for a change, possible date. I don't know about probable, but possible. And we'll use pullbacks to deploy the remaining cash until the model changes. However, the ebullience on Wall Street will not last very long. A big challenge will begin in the third quarter of 2021. The comparisons between Q3 2020 growth rate and the 2021's growth rate are going to be impossible. It's just going to give an opportunity for us to understand before most on Wall Street see that the growth of the economy and the rate of inflation is going to decrease on a second derivative basis around that time. That's almost guaranteed. I mean, anything's possible. That's almost virtually guaranteed. It's also around the Q3 of 2021 where vaccine disappointments, if any, will come to the fore. Of course, the worst case scenario is a successful Fed eventually. I believe the Fed will eventually be successful and one day will achieve and even exceed its own asinine inflation target. But by the way, and I've said this often, it bears repeating, the Fed has an absolutely miserable history with controlling inflation or deflation. It can't easily get out of deflation. It can't create inflation and then quickly turn it off. Remember, Volcker had to take interest rates to 20% to fight the inflation of the 70s. But once inflation exceeds 2.5% on the core personal consumption expenditure index, long-term rates will begin to spike out of control across the fixed income spectrum because the free market is going to anticipate that the Fed is going to be forced to slam on the brakes with its unprecedented zero interest rate policies an unprecedented level of QE, $120 billion a month, unprecedented level of QE. That's going to have to change. And when that happens, the carnage in the stock market will be both abrupt and severely acute. And just to give you an example, you know, I want to talk a bit about why the deep state of Wall Street's favorite 60-40 portfolio, buy and hold 60-40, you know, 60% stocks and 40% bonds, has not historically always worked out well. And that was true even before both became in an absolute epic bubble like they are today. Let's go over some data. So from the year 1900 to the year 1919, 19 years, if you owned a portfolio that was 60% stocks and 40% bonds, over those 19 years, you lost 1.8% of your money. From 1930 to 1943, 13 years, you actually gained, this is what you got for those 13 years, 0.2%. From 1947 to 1954, in those 7 years, you made 0.4%. These are nominal numbers, does not factor in to inflation. In the 9 years from 1961 to 1970, you made 0.5%. In the 11 years from 1974 to 1985, you made 0.7%. And from the 10 years from 1999 to 2009, you lost 1.6%. This is data from Bloomberg, FactSet, JP Morgan, and it was featured on a website called, it'll come to me in a second if I get it. It was On My Radar by Steve Blumenthal, if you want to look at the chart further. Now, here's something I really have to impress upon you. During these six times where the market didn't do anything for about 10 years to 20 years, that's the time frame here, six times, six durations, throughout the last 120 years, a balanced portfolio returned nothing. The stock market was in a bubble. So if you look at the cyclically adjusted PE ratio going back 10 years, so at a rolling average of 10 years, it was 22, 31, 22, 37, and 31. It's 31 today. So in none of these past periods of time when the cyclically adjusted PE ratio or CAPE ratio was elevated like it is today, the stock market didn't do anything for 10 years. But it's worse than that because none of these previous periods, none of them had the bond market in a bubble. The CAPE ratio has only been higher than it is today one time in history in the year 1999, and for the first time in the history of forever, we have the 10-year Treasury note yield below 1%. Now, having an investment process that can benefit from bull and bear markets is indeed crucial. You just listened to what I said and understood what I said. You'll understand that you just can't buy and hold a balanced portfolio, not when these times are so dangerous. And here's a key point. Because what is for most something to fear is for us becoming an opportunity to make money because we go long and we go short and have a robust model. One that tries to get the timing right. And that is what PPS is all about.
Thank you so much for listening to this edition of The Reality Check, 5 minutes of sanity in an insane world. Please remember, if you're not already an investor with PPS, you can email me directly using mpento@pentoport.com or call the office using 732-772-9500 to get information about our portfolio services. You should also go to Amazon and order my book, The Coming Bond Market Collapse. Subscribers should contact an investment advisor before acting on any information contained in this podcast. No information on this podcast constitutes an offer to sell or buy any financial instruments or to provide any investment services. Subscribers understand there's an inherent risk in investing. PPS is a registered investment advisor.